help the team learn as much as possible about your loved one.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 27 of The Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today, I'm thrilled to have Roseanne Burke join me to share tips and strategies to help you be a better care partner with staff who may be helping provide care for your loved one, whether at your home or in a long-term care setting. Roseanne is a professional speaker, educator, and owner of Kedgy Consulting and Dementia Education and Training Business. She facilitates group workshops and offers individualized coaching sessions for families and healthcare professionals. She is passionate about improving the care and quality of life for persons living with dementia and their care partners. She is also the care partner to her father and an active volunteer with the Alzheimer's Society of Nova Scotia. Welcome to the Alzheimer's Podcast, Roseanne.
Thank you, Mike. Thrilled to be here.
It's great to have you here, and Roseanne's going through the big snowstorm and crazy winds right now. So with any luck, all the technology will hold out for us there. So Roseanne, as you and I know, getting help from others to provide care for a loved one with dementia is essential to maximizing the well-being of both the primary care partner as well as the person living with dementia. However, putting trust in others with such an important job is often a very emotional and difficult thing for caregivers to do. What would you say, or do you say, to a care partner who is struggling to allow strangers or even family members to care for their loved one?
Well, absolutely. It is or can be a very difficult thing for a lot of us. And first of all, I would say that it's important to acknowledge that, yes, caring for a loved one is very emotional. And at this point, you may be filled with a range of emotions, whether it be guilt or sadness or anger, confusion, you know, and whatever it is that you're feeling, understand that those feelings are normal and it's perfectly okay. So, you know, it can be difficult to let other people in to help us, and we think that no one else can do it as well as us. You know, that's the first thing I would say, is just acknowledge those feelings. The second part is, I would also say that having a team to care for a person is essential. So no one person can or should do it 24/7. And there's lots of data about caregiver burnout. So it's a very common occurrence for caregivers to get sick themselves because of the stress and strain of caring for someone. So, you know, take care of yourself and the other person. And to do so, it's essential to get a team in place.
That's so very true, and I say that so often to people, because I believe so many new caregivers or families are so, they underestimate the amount of emotional, physical, and financial toll this disease can have, and we're so taught to be independent and do things for ourselves. It's so hard to take that team approach often.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the emotional side of it, of course, as you said, it's just, this can be so up and down and very hard.
Really, yeah. It's a roller coaster for a lot of the time.
The roller coaster is a good, probably the best analogy or that we can use there. But, you know, often when you're working with a team, what I've seen is, you know, a breakdown in communication. That's what happens, where there's misunderstandings, and that often leads to discord and among team members. So can you explain to us why effective communication is so important within a long-term care setting?
Yes. You know, I think, again, I think admission to long-term care, it's such a time of tremendous change for family members. Mm-hmm. And again, it's so often filled with those emotions of stress and guilt and confusion. And as a result of all the emotions, there's a huge potential for failure in communication between the caregivers and the family. So clarifying questions, setting treatment goals, and addressing concerns from the very beginning will help to prevent any problems, hopefully, and conflicts that might arise in the future. And essentially, effective communication, it's the foundation of excellent patient care and will really help to create the best environment for assuring that your loved one's needs and preferences are met and they're comfortable and their days are filled with meaning. And all of this means improved satisfaction for both the person and their family.
True.
So it's critical to get those effective working relationships off the ground early to help promote trust among the team members. And on the flip side, when that doesn't happen, you know, poor communication can really contribute to suffering because it will exacerbate both the person in care and the family's sense of isolation and helplessness and feelings of anxiety, perhaps.
Right. That's very true. And what role do you think the care facility or the professional caregivers have in helping the family understand the importance of communication?
I think everybody plays a shared role and responsibility. And I think for the team members, you know, it's important to realize they may have seen other families go through this numerous times. So they may, you know, they may be very experienced at it. Whereas for the family, they're being thrown into this, you know, probably for the very first time. And so I think it's, you know, really helpful for the other team members to sit down with the family and be proactive in sharing what resources are out there and what supports are going to be in place to help them.
Right. That's true. And because I've seen so many caregivers struggle with the transition into the care home. And I've seen where some homes seem to have a good process in place to help the care partners, the family, make that transition, while others have kind of failed, in my opinion. Is there a particular person or professional in a care home that the family should turn to or be looking to for that more of that guidance through the transition?
Well, yeah, I think all the professionals on the team are really important and they all bring a special and unique perspective. I think one person that I would like to highlight in terms of someone who maybe isn't thought of as often, and that's the social worker.
Right.
Because, you know, the primary mandate of social workers within long-term care is to advocate on behalf of residents and their families. And their focus is really on, you know, helping with the social and emotional impact of a person's conditions. So they can be invaluable in helping to, you know, proactively solve any issues that may arise, locating resources, you know, understanding, helping the family to understand how different systems interact, mm-hmm. And what resources are out there, and just mediating those concerns. So I would say find the social worker, because most facilities will have one. And, you know, this is the person who will often have their finger on the pulse of things, both within the facility and the larger community. So they can be a very good support person, and I find they're very well trained in communication as well. So they can be a real ally to have on your side.
Yeah, that's true. That's been my observation too. And I've been in the care facilities, as the social worker is often a great source of comfort and help, and usually very well trained in dementia care, in my experience. I mean, of course that's going to vary from place to place. But as you mentioned, though, there is an entire team, and that's what's great about it, because really there are so many different needs, right, with the activities of daily living and enrichment throughout the day. That it's that team process that you talk about. Are there other members of the team that the care partner should turn to, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, a couple other people to think about are the ones who can provide spiritual care and recreational care and emotional or mental health support. So finding out who the people and programs are that can help with those areas. Because again, I think sometimes they may get neglected in terms of the care plan, maybe not, but right. You know, it's really important to find out how the person in care is going to spend their time And because everyone needs to feel like they have a purpose and can contribute in a meaningful way to their community. So, you know, what is there for the person to do? How will they get their spiritual needs met, their emotional needs? How will they fill their day? And if you don't help to fill it, they may find things to do that upset other residents or that you don't like or want them to do. So it's, you know, I think it's important to be upfront about what these people can bring to the table.
That's very good suggestions there. So, Roseanne, in the article you just shared with the Together in This Audience, the 10 tips for effective communication with the long-term care team, you mentioned that some communities have welcome packages that can help the members get acquainted with. Also, that there are rules and guidelines that people that need to adhere to and follow. And I'm sure sometimes that can be tough on, on families.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if they're not upfront in giving you such a package, chances are that it does exist. So ask for the information that they share with families and, you know, find out some places I'm sure have more policies than others. But whatever it is, you want to learn the lay of the land, so to speak, and learn as much about the facility as possible. Who the people are, who are the leaders, who's hands-on, who are you going to see every day, and who might you not see very often but can still contribute to your loved one's care. So, you know, and take all that information home. And one of my top tips is to file all that information in one spot. So I think it really helps to stay organized because you're going to get a lot of information thrown at you. And the second tip second tip is to keep a notebook with you at all times. So you think you're going to remember things, or at least I did, but I can tell you that the information can quickly become overwhelming, and having that notebook and keeping track of who you've talked to on what day about what and any decisions that were made, it's a really helpful practice to adopt early on.
Yeah, I recommend the notebook in quite a few episodes because it's just such a daunting thing. And especially if you're going into a kind of a dynamic environment like a care home where there's so much going on and you're seeing so many different team members, and you've got the nurse and the doctor, the social worker, right? Even the people working the front desk play an active role in helping your loved one when they come into the lobby or, you know, looking for something to do. So that's such an important, the notebook is probably the number one tool I always recommend to people.
Yeah, we're on the same page then.
So one thing I've seen with care partners when they first bring their loved one to a community is they have trouble letting go. They have trouble leaving and not coming back two or three times a day. Do you have any thoughts or advice on that particular struggle?
Yeah, I think the first advice I would give is, you know, follow your heart or listen to your gut. Some people will say, you know, bring the person in and leave them for a couple of weeks and let them get settled. Personally, I know I could never have followed that advice. Right. So it's going to be individual and unique maybe to each situation or family. But first of all, yeah, I think you have to do what is comfortable for you. And secondly, probably, I mean, seeking out that advice or counsel from others who have gone ahead of you, so to speak, in this journey. So finding out from others what they find is helpful or has assisted with that process of leaving and saying goodbye.
Right.
And probably experimenting a little bit and finding out what works, what time of day is going to be good.
True. And I think a lot of it also just comes back to that communication, right? We want to make sure you don't want to just keep showing up randomly. You want to show up, but also let the staff know that you're going to, you know, show up, and you want to talk to the staff while you're there and build that relationship. Because if you're just coming in and kind of undermining their process and what they're doing and not having that back and forth conversation with them, I think that can be detrimental.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree. Yeah, just making them aware of sort of what routine you plan to follow or what they can expect of you and vice versa. So like you say, I think everyone, you know, can row the boat in the same direction, so to speak, rather than, right, you know, undermining or being detrimental to one another. Yeah, and during those visits, you know, saying hello, getting to know the staff, I think that's really important. Saying hello to someone new that you don't recognize on the team, maybe. And letting everyone sort of learn about you and your loved one and the role that you're going to play within the team and with their care.
I totally agree with that. And I think it's so important to build those relationships with each other. You know, while you're there, you see things, and if you forget to take notes, you get home and you want to ask questions or know something. What is your suggestion on how the family members should contact the community and get answers they need?
Well, I think, you know, like you said, writing things down immediately. So remembering what it is that you want to find out. And then, you know, bringing those concerns up, you know, on your next visit or on your next phone call. Finding out from the facility, you know, how they want that communication to take place and vice versa too. So, right, you know, not just what is said, but how it's said and when it's said, you know, all of those things are important so that people receive communication in the way that they wish to receive it. So whether that be a phone call or an email or in person, because I know personally, there's some information I have no problem if there's a phone call about it, and there's other things that I'm going to want you to tell me in person if it's something more sensitive or maybe emotionally charged.
Right, right.
I'm going to want to be there and not get that information over the phone.
That's a really good point. There's different levels of communication, right? There's the
absolutely.
I want to give you a phone call I want to ask you what the process is for my loved one to have lunch or something. That's pretty benign or not, but if you want to call and understand why they're taking this medication you didn't know about, now it's kind of getting to a more of a very not urgent but a very important piece of communication. That's
right.
Not meaning that nothing's important, but that's, we're getting more into that care part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is sort of questions around medication that I had in mind when I said that. So it's that type of information that I want to be sitting across from you so we can have a real heart to heart if necessary.
The other thing I just had go through my mind was, I've heard a lot, is people's personal belongings tend to get misplaced or borrowed, we'll say, by other residents. Just, you know, innocently. It's all innocent stuff, but that always seems to be a very emotionally charged point for the family member. And I've seen some conflicts created out of that. I don't know if I have a question there, but I think it's back to just that communication and with the professionals helping the loved ones understand, or the family members understand what's going on and whether it's really a big issue or not.
Yeah, exactly. And for some people, it will be a big issue, and for others, it won't be. So it's, again, it's one of those things that I think it is very, very common to have that occur. And some people will react differently and there'll be different responses to whether or not it's your family member who's borrowing the items.
Right.
Or if it's your family member who is having their own possessions, borrowed. So what? Right. Depending on the side of the fence that you sit on, maybe. But again, understanding what the expectations can be around that and what the policies are, or, you know, and the family members might have ideas around what will help or
true
what can be done in those situations.
Yeah, you probably don't want your loved one running around with a family heirloom. So that you might want to mitigate risk by not having valuables, for instance. And
right.
Because it's one thing to lose a pair of slippers and another thing to lose a sacred watch or pendant or something.
Exactly.
So Roseanne, tell the audience, if you can, what can family members do to help optimize the care for their loved one?
I think, Mike, one of the most important things you can do is help the team learn as much as possible about your loved one.
Right.
So, you know, many facilities will have that type of process where they will interview the person and or the family to find out about the person's life history. But, you know, you want them to really learn the story of who this person is beyond their medical file, which may be the only piece of information that accompanies the person. And learning the background to the person can really help create a personalized care plan. So, you know, helping them to understand where did your loved one grow up and what was their occupation and their hobbies and do they have children and grandchildren and, you know, did they like to travel and what was their daily routine like and their preferences. And, you know, I think it's important to know that people with dementia, as do all of us, we continue to have likes and dislikes throughout our life. So just because a person has dementia doesn't mean all of those things are no longer important.
Exactly.
You know, if they always read the morning newspaper, continue to give them the morning newspaper.
Right.
You know, that's something that will be familiar and comforting to them.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to give it to them any time of day.
Right.
if that's what they want. I mean,
exactly.
I want to add that when I was a volunteer at our local adult day center, sometimes adult children would bring their loved one in. Their loved one didn't want to stay, and rightfully so. Just like any of us, we don't want to get locked in some room with strangers. Mm-hmm. But when a daughter handed me a one-page profile of her mom that I was able to quickly read, and it talked about how her mom had been a school teacher for 30 or 40 years, I was quickly able to use that information to help reduce her mom's level of stress just because I started talking to her about being a teacher.
And right.
It didn't take away her complete desire to leave, but it did make things a lot easier. And that was just one little piece of background information.
Absolutely.
I do have a personal, person-centered profile that I have on my website, and I'll include it in the show notes. But I hope that most communities provide something like that for family members to complete, so there's a standard process.
Yes.
But I think that is one of the most important things to help get that person-centered care. Believe it or not, we're already on almost the 25 minute mark.
Oh, wow.
It always goes fast. Are there any other general communication tips that you'd like to share that may help professionals or family members?
I think something I would like to end with is keep in mind the family dynamics and how can family members communicate effectively with one another, because there's a lot of people that can come into play, and there can be a lot of stress and different emotions. Again, getting back to the emotions.
Right.
But I think it's really important for the team, all of the team, to know who the family members are that are going to play a role, what will the role be, and for the family members to proactively communicate with one another.
Oh, very true.
Because Tipa Snow has an expression that dementia destroys families.
Right.
And unfortunately and sadly, that's very true. So, or can be true. So I think it's really important not to take relationships for granted and for the families to really spend the time to communicate with one another.
That's a great advice. I hadn't thought about the other family members, which that family dynamics is always a curveball to simplify things, but it seems like it'd be very, very important for any family member that's going to be involved and visit to maybe come to the couple of the initial meetings with the social worker and team.
Yeah, really become familiar and understand the environment as much as they can. And even if they're not going to be there maybe as frequently as another team member or another family member, but just to have a sense of what's going on. And I think to be there is the best way to do that.
So thank you, Roseanne, and thank you to our audience for joining us today. There's a great episode with some awesome suggestions and tips to help be a better care partner with care staff. And to our audience, you know, be sure to check out the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode27, where you'll find any additional links and related resources. So remember, don't be afraid to speak up and ask questions. Bye-bye.
Bye, Mike. Thanks to your audience for listening today.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherness.com/podcast.